Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, right now, I have quite an interesting author with me. He is Elliot Parker. Elliot is the author of three novels, Breakdown at Clear River, Making Arrangements, and Fragile Brilliance. His second novel, Making Arrangements, was selected as a best book of 2014 by USA Book News. His latest novel, Fragile Brilliance, was a finalist for the Lords of Discipline Thriller Prize, part of the Pat Conroy Southern Book Prize, in thriller writing. In 2016, the National Literary Habitat Organization awarded Elliot with the Bronze Award for Mystery Thriller Writing. His short fiction has appeared in One Story Magazine, Apex Books, Evil Jester Press, and others. In October of 2016, Elliot was awarded the Literary Merit Award from the West Virginia Library Association for his books and stories, and he currently teaches writing and literature at Mount West Community and Technical College in Huntington, West Virginia. He received the Outstanding Faculty Teaching Award in 2015 and was honored by the West Virginia Community College Association for Outstanding Contributions to Community College Education. He is also a teacher consultant with the National Writing Project and is a certified online course reviewer for Quality Matters. He hosts the television show Chapters across the Armstrong Television Network, which profiles authors, editors, and publishers in West Virginia, Ohio, and Kentucky. And episodes can be found on YouTube.com. And most importantly, he is the proud pet owner of two loving and spoiled cats, Layla and Buddy. And you got me right there, Elliot. So let's find out more. Welcome to the network, Elliot.
Hi, Pat. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate you having me on your program.
Such a pleasure. And any cat advocate is a friend of mine because I have 13 rescue cats.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that is wonderful. Mm-hmm. Both my cats, Layla and Buddy, were rescues. They both just kind of showed up on my doorstep one day, and they kind of became mine. And I certainly think that life is so much better with kitty cats.
Isn't that the truth? That's how mine started. Just one showed up, and it was a mother. We just couldn't get her captured to get her fixed. You know, we just kept all the family. So I love that. Layla and Buddy, so they're good friends of yours.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, my, I like it. Well, before we talk about your previous books, Breakdown at Clear River, Making Arrangements, and Fragile Brilliance, tell us about your most recent book. The title is Code for Murder, and I'm especially interested because it takes place in Cleveland, Ohio. That's where I'm from. That's where I am right this moment. So why Cleveland?
Cleveland has always been really a special place for me and my family. My dad's side of the family, they were coal miners. They worked in the coal mines in southern West Virginia, which is where I was born and raised, in the late 60s and early 1970s. And what ended up happening when the coal mines went through their first sort of downturn, And the coal industry went through its first significant downturn in that period, and a lot of the mines in southern West Virginia were shutting down. A lot of my dad's family then moved north to Cleveland, and they went and worked in the shipyards and the steel yards, the steel mills down there by the waterfront. Some of them worked at the Goodyear rubber plant in Akron and some other places along I-77 there in between Cleveland and Akron. And so I can remember, us going up there and visiting them quite a bit. We would go up there and see them, in the summertime, and we'd go up and stay with them around holidays and things of that nature. So going to Cleveland was something that, I always looked forward to. It was the big city, and we always had such a good time. My dad was a huge Cleveland Browns fan. My family had season tickets for a number of years. So we've been a part of Cleveland in some way, shape, or form for most of my life, most of my dad's life, most of his family's life. So, we've had a connection with Cleveland that goes back a really long time.
Mm-hmm. I think there is a big connection between West Virginia and Cleveland. My dad grew up in West Virginia.
When my dad's family, finished their working careers, they retired from the steel mills and retired from the Goodyear plant and so on and so forth, they kept their home or their property up in Cleveland, but then they moved back to West Virginia. They came back to the same communities and the same towns and the same places that they had to leave before. So that sense of, Cleveland being home to them was really strong, but also they really looked forward to getting back to where they were kind of born and raised in southern West Virginia.
Yep, I get that. I really do. Well, tell us a bit about that book, Code for Murder.
Code for Murder centers on a fictional Cleveland homicide detective named Stacey Tabbitt. As the book opens up, she is leading an undercover investigation looking for a missing informant. There is an informant that she has been working with who's been supplying her some information on a couple of cases that she's been trying to actively close. The informant has gone missing. She follows a lead to possibly where his whereabouts might be. As she gets there, she notices a couple of the criminals that she's been watching or has been wanting to round up based on the informant's information doing something that they shouldn't be doing down in the flats area of Cleveland, down by the Cuyahoga River. And she makes kind of an impulsive decision to go ahead and confront those criminals that she sees because she wants to stop them from doing what they're doing, and she also wants to see if they know where her informant is. And she doesn't wait for backup. You know, she knows backup's coming, but she makes the impulsive decision to go in on her own, and it has a disastrous result for her personally. So after that, after we get into that scene and kind of explore what happens there, the book picks up about 6 months later. She's been on medical leave because of what happened to her in that undercover sting that kind of went bad. And her first case back from medical leave is involving the murder of a Cleveland Browns football player named Devin Baker. So she goes to Windy Park on Whiskey Island there north of Cleveland and finds his body kind of laying there near the lake, near an entrance to Lake Erie. And that's really where the investigation starts. She's got to find out, you know, who would do this to him? Why would this be done? Who is involved? She doesn't have very much forensic evidence to go on. So she's really kind of left at a loss for really where to start the investigation. And as the book unfolds, she gets a little deeper into the investigation. She and people close to her start becoming targeted by the killer, by the person who's responsible. She meets a lot of Devin Baker's friends, who some of them tell her the truth about what's going on. Some of them tell her information that's totally not true in an attempt to kind of put her off track in the investigation. So there's a lot of things going on there. Stacey's really kind of put to the test in terms of trying to find out who did this to Devin Baker.
Oh, sounds very intriguing. And you write a strong female character. Why did you pick a female? And secondly, was that easy or difficult for you to write?
We know, Pat, it was probably one of the biggest challenges for me as a writer. I've had female characters in my other novels, but this was the first time that I had my protagonist be a female. So getting inside of that female persona was really challenging but very rewarding. It was really interesting to kind of step inside, you know, a different gender and have this strong personality. I had wanted to do something. I've wanted to have a strong female character, a strong female detective for a long time. I just had spent, you know, a year or two trying to figure out the right plot and the right story that might work for that kind of a character. And then one of the things I found interesting, I started just doing some research, and you know, there aren't that many really strong female detective leads in a lot of mystery and thriller fiction. I mean, I know Janet Ivanovich has that with her Stephanie Plum series, although she's more of kind of a private eye hybrid detective. But there's just not a lot of really strong female, you know, detectives or female investigators in mystery and thriller fiction. So I felt like that was an opportunity to maybe carve into a little niche or expose an area or get into an area that maybe hadn't been covered before. Because, you know, as you know, mystery and thriller genre, you know, a lot of people are writing in that genre. There's a lot of books written about, you know, murders and mysteries and those kinds of things. And so trying to find a different angle with some of the same, covering the same ground is always challenging. But so I wanted to do that too. I felt like it would be a good opportunity to promote and develop a female homicide detective in a genre where there's not very many of them.
Very smart of you to do that, and you've had a great payoff because you've gotten great feedback on this book.
Yes, it's really interesting, Pat, when you write a book, and I know you've talked to other authors, and I've listened to some of the other authors on your show, and you know, when you send a book out there, you just never know. You know, you're proud of it, you've put a lot of time and effort into it, but once it goes out into the world, you sort of kind of hold your breath and hope that, you know, it's going to be received as well as you hope it will be. But yes, it got a 5-star review from Reader's Favorite magazine. The Richmond Times-Dispatch newspaper named it a can't miss book of the fall season. The American Booksellers Association is going to feature it in their October newsletter that goes to all the independent bookstores around the country. So yes, the feedback has been really, really good on the book so far. So that's been really exciting to see.
I love that. And how rewarding for you. There's nothing better than to be recognized positively for your work.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, you spend so much time as a writer, so much time, you know, by yourself and kind of away from people, and you live with these characters for so long, and you're trying to make a book that's going to, you know, really grab readers and keep them interested and keep them turning the pages. And so, yes, it is. It's really rewarding when all that time and effort, you know, gets noticed and gets recognized.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations to you.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Well, let's talk about Breakdown at Clear River, and then the next was Making Arrangements and Fragile Brilliance. So, yeah, let's start with Breakdown at Clear River. Just a little synopsis of each one so we can entice our listeners.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, be glad to. Breakdown at Clear River takes place on a fictional college campus in West Virginia. Basically, what happens, one of the students at the school is found murdered in a dormitory stairwell prior to the start of the semester. And so what you have really going on in that story is his friends and people that knew him try to figure out what happened to him. The administration and the investigators who were kind of looking into the legal, you know, the legal evidentiary side of it are trying to wrap up the mystery and are trying to wrap up the murder, solve the case, and move on because it creates a huge PR problem for the school. And so you've got really two different tracks of story. You've got the school trying to figure out and kind of move on from the investigation, and there's some cover-up going on there, and then you've got his friends who are really trying to figure out what really happened to him. Making Arrangements centers on two brothers, Colin and Owen Madsen. Their father was a funeral director in Concord, Massachusetts. He has passed away and left the business to his oldest son, Colin. And Colin doesn't want the business, but he doesn't know what he wants to do with it. He doesn't know if he wants to keep it or sell it. His younger brother, Owen, wants to sell it and take the money and kind of run. Colin feels a little bit more conflicted about it because that business and his dad meant so much to the community, and there's a family legacy and a family name there associated with that business. And so he's really torn on what to do. And as he goes back to the funeral home to kind of decide what to do, he meets people and hears stories, and there's some situations that come up that kind of make him think, well, maybe I should sell it, and then maybe I need to keep it. So it's sort of that family drama type story. And then Fragile Brilliance takes place in Charleston, West Virginia, which is where I grew up, and it centers on a police sergeant named Ronan McCullough, who, at the beginning of the story, he's off duty. On his way to work, he notices a college student getting attacked outside of a sports bar in downtown Charleston. He goes to intervene to stop it, and instead of those three guys and the college student kind of stopping and kind of backing off when he says, police, you know, stop, those three men turn on him, and they nearly beat Ronan to death. And so that story centers on who are these three guys. What's interesting, as he finds out who those three men are and kind of what they're up to, just as he gets ready to arrest them or capture them, somebody's getting there and murdering them just before he gets ready to make the arrest. And so he's got to find out who's doing this. Is it somebody he knows? Is it somebody he doesn't know? But who's targeting these three men that attacked him, and why? What's the ultimate motivation there? So, yeah, that's basically a quick summary of all three of those books there.
Thank you for doing that. Now, Making Arrangements is kind of a departure from your mystery thriller genre.
Yes, it is. I had written that story. My dad had passed away in July of 2008 from pancreatic cancer. And so part of the way I dealt with that and dealt with his loss was to write a story about fathers and sons and that special relationship. I just wrote it more for me. I didn't really write it to be published. A friend of mine who I'm in a writing group with had gotten a hold of a couple pages, and she said, wow, Elliot, this is really good. You really need to get this published. And so, long story short, Sunstone Press ended up picking up the story and going with it. So it was one of those kind of accidental books. I hadn't really wanted, you know, expected it to be published or really sought that route, but it ended up getting published. So yeah, it is definitely a little deviation from the other three books.
I knew as you were giving us the little synopsis of the book, I knew there was something personal with that book. I knew that had to have touched you somewhere. Now, do you work full time? Do you write full time? How do you balance all of this?
As you mentioned earlier, I teach at Mount West Community College in Huntington. It's a great job that I love very much, but at the same time, it can kind of conflict and sometimes cause problems with my writing schedule. I do have the advantage of writing a lot in the summer, you know, late May, June, July, and August. I get a lot of writing done during that time when I'm not teaching. During the school year, when I am teaching, the best way that I can get writing done is I write a little bit each day, usually early in the morning. I kind of get up before, you know, everything gets going in my house and everybody's up and Buddy and Layla are up and moving around and all of that. And, you know, I'll write for 30 minutes to an hour, usually around 45 minutes to an hour, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. And I find that if I do that, that keeps me on a schedule, that keeps me kind of regimented in whatever it is that I'm working on. I don't really look at word counts or focus on that. I just sit down and kind of have seat time working on the story, making a little bit of progress there. And then, you know, at breaks and Christmas break and summertime, I can really make significant progress. But I've just found, Pat, that if I wait for, during the year, if I wait for the right moment or if I wait for the inspiration to strike me, something will always come up, you know, because you're always tired or you've always got laundry to do or there's always other things going on. So I just try to carve out a little bit of time each day and make it just like just like almost like a calendar appointment like you'd have in your scheduling mm-hmm. book or on your phone to get that writing done. And I feel like that helps me stay on track with my writing goals.
No, I get that. And on the flip side of that, I can imagine there's times when you are teaching and you've got this brilliant idea and it's like, oh, no, I wish I could stop right now and write.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, I've had many of those moments where I'll be at school and, you know, in the recent, you know, I'll be grading papers or getting ready for class. And in the back of my mind, you know, my mind has been working over a plot hole or, I've written myself into a corner in a certain chapter. And then, yes, the light bulb goes off and I think, oh, yes, that's it. Now I know how to get that character out of that problem. Or I know how to construct that conversation between these two characters. And I wish I could just drop everything and run home and sit down at the computer and get it out before I forget. Those are great moments, too, because it shows that at least your brain, even when you don't think about it or think that it is sort of kind of chewing that over, mulling over what it is that you've been thinking about.
Oh, absolutely. I've had so many authors say the same thing, that some of their more brilliant pieces come while they're in the shower. So I get it. I do. So we've mentioned some of your characters. Let's delve a little bit into the whole character development. How do you begin to write your characters? Do you use any kind of questionnaires? How do you form these people?
I have a sheet that I use, and a good friend of mine, Sandy Tritt, gave this to me probably about 10 years ago. It's a character sketch sheet, and it's got everything. It's almost like you're creating somebody or like you're doing a profile of somebody. Name, height, weight, hair color, eye color, build, all those kinds of questions. But then at the bottom of that sheet, it has a lot of different questions to help develop character. It'll ask you things like, what is this character's greatest joy? What would be this character's greatest fear? What would make this character angry? What would make this character anxious? What would make this character fearful? All these different kinds of questions. And it's just a front and back sheet of paper, and you just kind of fill that in. And when I'm developing characters, I don't always fill in every blank, but those statements and those prompts really help me think about a character and really help me think about, how is this character going to be different from the other characters in the story? Or is how is, you know, Stacy Tabbitt going to be different from Ronan McAuliffe? And even though they share some similar traits in terms of their investigative skills as police officers, their personalities and temperament are very different too, and they respond and react to different stimuli very differently. So that sheet really helps me develop my characters. And like I said, even though I don't necessarily answer every question for every character, when I'm thinking about building them and developing them, it helps me keep those ideas and those thoughts in mind in terms of developing them. So I try to make, you know, you want, you know, round characters certainly and not flat characters, and you want characters to have some similarities and some ability to relate to one another, but you do want them different. You mm-hmm. want, when two characters are having a conversation in a chapter, you want them to, even if they're friends or even if they're, you know, in a relationship or even if they're related or even if they don't like each other, you know, they've got to be able to have enough difference between them to make them interesting so that the reader will follow along in that conversation. So that sheet really helps me a lot, and it helps me kind of stay focused and on track with my character development.
Now, do your characters ever say, mm-mm-mm, take off and go out and do their own thing? And you say, but wait, that's not on the sheet. You can't do that.
Oh, many times. There were many times in Code for Murder where I wanted to write Stacy into a certain mold or put her in a certain position. And as I got into the story or got into that chapter, into that scene, Stacy just decided, nope, I'm going to react and respond this way. And that's the great thing about that sheet too, that you know, even though you've got that, you've got those prompts. Yeah, many times characters will go in a different direction. And I just think, Pat, in the first draft, as a writer, that's where you give yourself that flexibility and that opportunity to see where that character is going to take you. Or, you know, you have it in your mind how it's going to go, but as you sit down and start putting it together, you know, it's okay to see where those characters, you know, wander off to or do something a little different. I think that's what makes the whole process so fun is it's amazing what your mind will do, both when you tell it to kind of do something, but also when you let really the total creative floodgates open and just let your mind take something somewhere. It's always great to see kind of where it ends up.
Oh, I agree. Just unleash that creative process and run with it and see where you land. I agree with that. Well, now, names. How do you go about selecting the names of your characters? Do they just come to you, or do you really think about, all right, why and how should this person be portrayed name-wise?
I really like names that aren't really common. I try to avoid names like Bill and Bob and Mike and Steve and, you know, names that we see people have all the time, or names that if you picked up a phone book or went on, you know, the whitepages.com that you would see periodically. So I like unique names. You know, I have Ronan, obviously, is a unique name in Fragile Brilliance. One of my characters in Breakdown at Clear River is named Dane, D-A-N-E. Another character is named Cullen. In Making Arrangements, I have Colin and Owen, which are two names that a lot of people that are common. So I try to pick names that aren't really common, you know, names that people can identify with, but it's not the same kind of same old. And oftentimes, you know, I'll be reading something or I will, you know, see a list of names. An example of how I came up with a character for Code for Murder is I was watching a football game, and, you know, they put the lineups on the screen, you know, the starting offense and starting defense. And I was just watching that, and I was just kind of, my eyes were looking across the screen, and I took a name from the first column and a name from the second column and matched up. Oh gosh, that'd be a great character name. So I wrote that down. So sometimes it just happens like that. You'll see two names, two uncommon names, and kind of partner them together. But I try to pick names that are a little different and a little unique with that.
Okay. And publishing. Did I notice that your books are published by different publishers?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, they are.
Tell us about the publishing process then.
It's really interesting and unique. Almost for every book. With Breakdown at Clear River, that book was published by a small press, Mid-Atlantic Highlands Press. I had gone to a workshop when I was still living in West Virginia at the time. I had gone to a workshop in Charleston. It was they called it a writer's toolkit. It was just writing workshops that were sponsored by the State Humanities Council. And there was a publishing panel that was there talking about the publishing process. And long story short, I ended up sitting at the lunch table with one of the publishers, and we got to talking, and he said, well, do you have anything that you're working on? And I told him about Breakdown the Clear River, and he said, well, yeah, send that to me. I'd like to take a look at it. And I kind of at first thought he was just humoring me a little bit, that he wasn't really serious about that. But I sent it to him, and you know, in the end, he ended up publishing it. For Making Arrangements with Sunstone Press, they had a writing contest, right, and I think it was late 2013, 2014. They were looking for manuscripts with a familial theme or a component of family. And I don't remember exactly. They took the top five or top 10 manuscripts for publication consideration, and then out of that, they picked three to publish next year. And so Making Arrangements was picked there. In terms of Fragile Brilliance and Code for Murder, I had an agent for one of those books, and she was my agent for probably about a year and a half. She helped me get the deal with Fragile Brilliance with Round Fire Books, but then she decided to leave the agenting industry and the agenting business. She decided to have a baby and start a family, and she wanted to stay at home with her child. And so I kind of got with Black Rose Press through some connections that she had. She'd recommended I contact some certain folks that might be interested in that kind of a story. And so I kind of used her connections, even though she's out of the business now, to land the publisher there. So sometimes for me, it's just been being at the right place at the right time. Sometimes it's been kind of doing your homework and looking for what publishers are looking for. Certainly if you can get an agent, that makes it a lot easier because they've got the contacts and the connections maybe that you don't have or don't have time to find or develop. So it's been kind of a different publishing path for each one of those books.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you've just been at the right place at the right time. And
yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I've enjoyed, you know, the relationship with all four of those publishers has been terrific. I mean, they've been wonderful to work with, very supportive of the books, very supportive of me, and, So it's been great, even though they're all four different, they're all four located in different parts of the country. They have different missions and themes in terms of what they publish. It's been a great experience working with all four of them.
Mm-hmm. Great. And what's next?
I have just finished the sequel for Fragile Brilliance. It's the second book in the Ronan McCullough series. It's called A Knife's Edge. So I've got the first draft done, so I'm kind of going back through and doing the revisions and you know, cleaning some things up there. And then I've got an idea for the next book in the Stacey Tabbitt series. I'm doing a series of books with her. So there is a little bit of a cliffhanger or a little bit of an open-ended ending at the end of Code for Murder. But I'm going to do a series with her. And so I've got the plot kind of structured, at least on paper, kind of what's going to happen to her in the second book. So I'm looking forward when I, you know, as soon as I get through the revisions of A Knife's Edge, I'm looking forward to starting on that book.
I love it. There's just always so much going on in your head, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Plus, you also host that television show, Chapters, which profiles authors, editors, and publishers. Tell us about that.
And that is a show that we've been doing now for about, I think I've been doing it 3 years. I think it was 3 years this past August. We've taped 105 episodes. Quick story about how that got started. Armstrong Television was looking to develop some community programming, and they were looking for different kind of shows that would be, you know, community-based or regional-based. And a librarian over in Lawrence County, where I live, Lawrence County, Ohio, which is in southern Ohio, contacted them and said, you know, have you thought about having a show that profiles, you know, authors and editors and publishers in the area? And they said, we'd love to do a show like that. And they said, well, you know, we know somebody that might be a good host, Elliot Parker. So they put me in contact, and we ended up getting together and doing that. We taped the first three shows in August of 2013. And we just kind of did them like trial balloons, just to kind of see how it would work and how it would happen. Would it work? Would anybody watch it? Well, those three episodes of that program ended up being some of the highest rated programming that they had on their channel. And so, we just kept doing it and doing them periodically and bringing in authors from Kentucky and West Virginia and publishers. And we've had Ohio University Press has been on, University of Kentucky Press has been on. We've had authors. I mean, it's been a great experience, but you know, it was something that we started not thinking that it would be a regular thing or be very, very well. We weren't sure if it would be watched or paid attention to, but it's been, since it started in August of 2013, it's been one of the highest rated programs, both on their television channel and also on their YouTube page as well. So it's been a great success and a lot of fun to help support other authors and publishers.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I love when things start off questionable and they just take off. It's an exciting ride for you, I'm sure.
Yes, it's been a lot of fun, and I think it's important, Pat, and I know you know this through the program that you do, for writers to help one another and support one another. We're all writing and publishing and trying to get ourselves, you know, noticed and get a following and a readership base. And so I feel like that's an important part of being a writer is to help those, you know, that are looking to get started or people that are kind of maybe in the middle of their writing career to help get them some attention and get them some publicity. So it's been a lot of fun and a great way to give back, I think.
No, I agree. We hear all kinds of feedback from authors and people that are not authors yet. When they listen to these interviews that are on our site, the comments that we get back was like, oh, wow, I thought I was the only one that did that or felt that, or this particular interview gave me the impetus to start writing. And so, yeah, I agree. It's a lonely business, and so to be able to hear what others have to say and how they make their way through this is very inspiring. So I appreciate your taking the time to share your experience with our listeners as well. Well, now we've hopped around your books today, but is there anything that we missed that you would like to talk about?
I don't think so. I think we've had a really good conversation, and I think we've talked about everything that I could think of, and I just appreciate the opportunity, Pat. Appreciate you taking the time and the interest to let me come on your program and talk about me a little bit and talk about my books. I really, really appreciate it.
Well, anyone that features their book in Cleveland and has cats, how could I resist? Couldn't resist,
Absolutely.
Elliot. So now, where could folks go to learn more about you, and where can they purchase your books?
You can purchase my books anywhere you like to buy a book, Barnes & Noble stores. I know there's a lot more Barnes & Noble stores kind of in central and northern Ohio than there is in southern Ohio. I know that's kind of a hot spot. So Barnes & Noble, Books A Million bookstores have them. You can get them online at Amazon. If you live in a community that has a local independently owned bookstore, if they carry them as well, I certainly hope that you'll visit those folks first, because I think our, local independent bookstores are so important to our communities, and the opportunities they provide authors to have their works displayed and carried, and they're really part of the heartbeat of your local community. So if you live in an area that's got a local independently owned bookstore, please patron them, if not for any one of my books, but maybe for just whatever it is that you're wanting to read. My website is just my name. It's elliottparker.com. You can go and find out more about me and about my books, and you can contact me there from my website. I'm on Facebook at Elliott Parker. My Twitter handle is E4419, and I'm on Instagram, too. I just got on Instagram here about 2 or 3 months ago, and it's just my name with a period in the middle, Elliott.Parker. So whatever social media platform you like to use, you can reach me there. And whenever you like to buy books, you can get copies of my books there. So I'd love to hear from your listeners, or if anybody just wants to talk about writing or questions about the writing process, or they're stuck and want some advice, I'd be happy to talk with folks about that too.
Oh, you are wonderful. Thank you for that plug for independent bookstores. I've never had someone say that yet, and I absolutely agree with you 100%. Very, very important in our community. So head over to your independent bookstores, and also head over to Elliott, E-L-I-O-T, Parker, P-A-R-K-E-R.com, ElliottParker.com. Well, I was so looking forward to this conversation today, and I so thoroughly enjoyed it, and thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Elliott.
Pat, thank you so much for having me on, and thank you for the good work you do. Really enjoy your program and appreciate all that you do. So thank you so much.